listening to Not So Live from Asteroid G, performing an elaborate diamond heist and then forgetting about it halfway, and I'm your host, my fingers crime.
What was that, right? Like, at the end of the movie, they're just like, oh, when can we go back up there and get the diamonds? I'm like, oh my god, like, what is this crap? Hi, Mike the Ghoul here, talking more Connery Bond and all its beauty.
I love how much that just derailed you. We are talking Diamonds Are Forever, which I'm going to spoiler this just a little right now. Maybe the second best, maybe third best, Connery Bond in the whole set, but that's not really saying much.
All this has taught me in this rewatch of the Bonds, and like, while I can appreciate the Connery era and like, yeah, he's my James Bond, the original, his movies kind of suck.
Yes.
Realistically, overall, they're average at best. Even the Brosnan era, I think, was better, but we'll get there when we get there.
This has been my issue from the beginning when people are like, man, I really love James Bond, is I looked at the list of Bonds and they got better, but they looked at the list of Bonds and you had like six Connerys and eight Roger Moores, and all of them are not the best. And I'm simply going, they're consistent, but they're not consistently great from my opinion. And it wasn't until like late era came around that Bond got to a point where I actually cared about them. So when people are like, I really love James Bond, I go, why? Just why? But
they're fun movies at times, but like, you know, there's why?
Why?
I get you.
We'll get into the movie in just a second, but before we do, we want to thank this week's sponsor, Omni Consumer Products, makers of RoboCop, the defender you need, the Detroit you want. Thank you, Omni Consumer Products. Diamonds Are Forever is about James going at the start of the movie to fight Blofeld. They've finally tracked down Blofeld, which you assume, if you're watching all of these in order, means that Tracy is dead and he's getting his revenge. And he even says, after he supposedly, let's be honest, we know Blofeld's never going to die. After he supposedly kills Blofeld, that was a very satisfying kill. So you feel like he's gotten his revenge after the George Lazenby Bond watched his wife die in front of him. After this, the movie is then like, okay, let's forget about that. Now, James, we need you to go and stop this elaborate diamond heist that's going on. And it does this whole montage. It plays everything out. He goes and meets this girl who's running the diamond scheme while other guys are going behind the scenes and slowly killing everyone involved in the scheme and cleaning up the whole thing. There's something going on, but it's a big elaborate diamond scheme. And we discover, as we follow it all the way from Africa to Amsterdam to Vegas, that it's really all run by Blofeld. And the second Blofeld shows up, it stops being a diamond heist. And we're like, let's just forget everything about a diamond heist. Now it's just about like pitting the USSR and US against each other in a war again for reasons.
We talked about this, right? Like Blofeld now, he's in it for the love of the game and torment at this point, right?
Yes. No, and that was actually one thing I really liked, is like Blofeld has given up on calling anything Spectre or having his numbers around or anything. None of that even matters now. He really is just in it for the love of the game and to try and see if he can make some scratch. I respect that about the character, but this movie doesn't really have a handle on its story at all.
Yeah, the pacing in all of the Bond movies sometimes is questionable, but it felt like two different movies rolled into one and neither one fully fleshed out. It was kind of weird.
No, yeah, because I was really invested in the diamond heist story. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah.
Like, it's the movie is weirdly like a two-act film with like two little addendums on each side. And the one act about the diamond heist was kind of cool. He was doing espionage. He was pretending to be people. He was winning over this woman who's going to help him get onto the next stage. Things are going back and forth. There's some cover-ups and some double crosses. I dug that. It was cool. Mm-hmm. And then Blofeld shows up and we get a completely different movie.
Well, Blofeld changes the calculus, right? Yeah. I guess.
Like, Blofeld shows up and suddenly it's Dr. No again, as opposed to, I don't know, Goldfinger.
Dr. Oh, no.
No, it's just a little weird. It was a little strange. I feel like the problem with this, and this is a movie that was directed by Guy Hamilton, who did Goldfinger, and then goes on to do a couple of the Roger Moores. This is a guy who's shown he knows how to handle the character, the setting, the story. He can do this. I don't feel like it's the fault of the director. I feel like this is the fault of the character, specifically Blofeld. It's as you said, when Blofeld shows up, the calculus changes, And I'm not sure the movies know how to account for that.
It's really weird. It's like, what, the third or fourth different iteration of Blofeld we've gotten along the way here. And okay, we're not going to get the same actor for the role each time. I can kind of understand that, I suppose. But I don't know. They're all different. You know, bald head, hair, changing surgery. And they explain it by, like, they're making copies of Blofeld and all that. And, like, you know, they're just kind of churning him out. Like, Control-Z, Control-V or whatever. Like, I don't know. It's just, Blofeld's a good villain. But this is, like, this is some weird shit they got going on with him in this first pack of movies that we've seen.
Yeah, it is weird. And it's because he's built up to be something different from any other villain that we've dealt with. He's not a number two. He's not Ulrich Goldfinger. He's this guy who's supposed to be the mega equivalent to James Bond. Now, first of all, James Bond isn't even the mega equivalent to James Bond. He's just this dude who wanders around and sometimes looks into things. The Connery Bond is one of the worst secret agents I've ever seen on screen.
I mean, say what you want about the Lazenby one we just watched as a Bond fan. He was at least much more of a spy than we've seen Connery be so far. There's just womanizing and drinking and gambling when Connery's around. That's about it.
Kind of boils down to just that. You're not wrong. And it's all for a story that definitely feels far more out of an Austin Powers movie than Goldfinger or On Her Majesty's Secret Service. It's a very over-the-top and silly thing. Like, I kind of understood Blofeld's plan in On Her Majesty's Secret Service. Go out, poison fields, have a lockdown on a market, do something. It's dumb when you really think about it, but it made sense in a certain over-the-top sort of way. But, like, I have a satellite of diamonds and I'm going to hold places hostage. Has to ignore a lot of logic, not the least of which is you have a single control room that can easily be blown up.
Right.
It doesn't make that much sense. And also, well, we're at it. To stop him, you have to go to his control room on an oil derrick out in the middle of nowhere and blow up the control room. Why are they sending an invasion fleet to do this at the end of the movie? Why not just drop a bomb?
I mean, plot, I guess, at that point. Like, I don't know. It made no sense to me either.
Yeah, Washington's being held hostage. You just go drop a bomb. It's not that hard.
Yeah, it really isn't. You know, I would expect a little bit more, especially from the United States government here. Yeah. Like, come on.
For this plan, this way, in Diamonds Are Forever to work, they have to ignore a lot of logic, which I don't feel we have to ignore in similar stuff. Goldfinger has its flaws in its plot, but there are little flaws you can kind of just gloss over. But, like, this movie requires you to basically shut your brain off at the halfway point, because that's when Blofeld shows up again and be like, oh, we're just gonna have an illogical story where guys run around for a little while.
You really hit it on the head there. It gives you those Austin Powers vibes, like, hardcore. I'm wondering who inspired who almost now, if these weren't 30 years older than the Austin Power movies, because, like, what a goofy-ass guy, right? Like,
well, we're going to get to that, but as Daniel Craig said, we had to do a different kind of James Bond because Austin Powers ruined the genre for us, which is absolutely accurate. When these movies feel like parodies of the Austin Powers movies, which are the parodies to begin with, that's a problem.
Yeah, and when the parodies are done better than what the parodies are parodied on, there's just a paradox of confusion.
Oh my god, I know. So I have notes, as I always do, because I can't help but look at these things and have to write some crap down about them. It's only been like 10 years since he started this franchise, but he's already looking pretty old in this movie. I understand Eon and UA freaking out about the fact that Lazenby left after a single movie, but Connery is a little too long in the tooth already to be playing Bond, and that doesn't even take into account that he comes back again for another reboot down the road. I agreed with him stepping away when he did, and I think him getting lured back with a bunch of money was the wrong call for this film.
I mean, it wasn't the wrong call for him, I guess, though. So, I mean,
he got paid a boodle.
It was a successful movie. Yeah, a successful movie overall, and I mean, I think he enjoyed his time playing Bond sometimes a little too much. You could tell he looked like he was just having a little too much fun sometimes offset.
I mean, speaking of, he starts the movie by forcefully stripping and strangling a woman because Connery's Bond is a certain kind of guy.
Yeah, the way they slap women in these movies too, or punch them and everything, I'm like, boy, what a different time, and I'm glad we're not there anymore, because this just feels as awkward as it looks.
Yeah, Lazenby's Bond was just a little more caring about the women that he was interacting with, and Connery's is just such an abusive motherfucker.
Yeah. You can totally feel that and get that vibe anyway.
That opening sequence I talked about, Blofeld and Bond are clearly meant to tie up their loose ends after On Her Majesty's Secret Service, but because we're just bouncing back and forth between Bond actors here, and there's absolutely no mention of Tracy when Bond gets his revenge, the scene doesn't really play. Like, you could almost extract On Her Majesty's Secret Service out of the timeline, and this movie would just bump right up against the last Connery that we did, and you'd never feel any flaw in continuity.
Right. Which feels really bad, considering that was a alleged huge moment in the ethos of the character here, of the Bond character, like the love of his life dying, and there's just basically no mention of that. Shouldn't this be a little anyway? We'll get there.
Shouldn't this affect you? Like, if Connery even played a little bit of pathos once in a while, he sleeps with a woman and then looks like he's struggling with it, or there are moments where he's just by himself having a drink and looks depressed, that would be something. This is a man that just lost the love of his life, but Connery is just like saunters on set like nothing happens, and you're like, this movie does not fit in the continuity where it needs to. Either this shouldn't have happened, or On Her Majesty's Secret Service has to be ignored entirely.
Yeah. It's a very weird vibe from the character after the alleged turning point of their life that they just had in the movie previous to this. Seems very strange.
Mm-hmm. Noting also, by the way, Diamonds Are Forever is a terrible song.
Yeah, was not good at all. We've certainly seen better Bond songs.
The topic of Tracy. Tracy's going to show up a lot here for a little bit, because I can't let this go. Moneypenny talking with Bond as Bond flits off to Amsterdam. He asks her if he should bring anything back for her. And she goes, a ring with a diamond in it. And I'm like, girl, he just lost his wife 2 years ago. You're asking for an engagement ring. That seems pretty fucking callous, you know?
Yeah. Moneypenny, just, you know, long gaming right here, apparently. Just waiting them all out.
And he doesn't even seem bothered by it. Get me a diamond ring. I know what that means. Oh, I know what that means too, Moneypenny. Dude. In Amsterdam, James is pretending to be someone else. Then he runs into the real person he's pretending to be. He kills the other person and then plants his own identity on that person and says, oh, this man's name is James Bond. And the girl he's dealing with, who's a diamond smuggler, not international secret agent, just a diamond smuggler, goes, oh my God, you've just killed James Bond. And I'm sitting there going, so James is not a very good secret agent, is he?
No, apparently not at all.
Random fucking people know who James Bond is. You're like, wow, putting that secret agent, my guy. We move to Vegas, and James goes wandering through a casino. And it's fascinating that just one decade in, we went from that opulent Monte Carlo looking casinos that we were seeing, really over the top, really selling you on that alternative lifestyle, to Bond going to Circus, one of the shittiest casinos in Vegas. And this is just like, it's a real downgrade in quality, you know?
Yeah, you pointed that out, and I was like, oh, wow, that really is a strange feel for Monte Carlo and fucking, you know, the way they would walk around there to, like, the seedy Vegas underbelly with, like, cigarette smokers and people, like, you know, drinking out of paper bags around the corner is what it felt like. It was not as glitzy and glam as we've come to expect from the Bond pattern of these movies where you see him gambling and it's, like, some high stakes. This just felt like grimy shit.
And Circus is known now to be one of the shittiest casinos still on the Vegas Strip. And it's not so much because, I mean, obviously it hasn't been really well maintained, but it's not so much because Circus has gotten much worse, but just that most of Vegas has gotten somewhat better. Circus is pretty indicative in this movie of how the whole of the Strip looked at the time, and it looks like ass. We do get the very temporary Bond girl, because she dies within a couple scenes, of Plenty O'Toole. And I laughed at that name because I'm like, you're trying for pussy galore and you're not hitting it.
they really try with some of these, you know, Bond girl names like that. And Plenty O'Toole was always a fun one, but upon rewatch, like, I thought she was around a little longer than she was.
Nope.
She was there and gone for knowing a name two like scenes. That comes yep. out of this franchise. It was really weird.
Yeah. She gets two scenes, a great name, then she's immediately axed and everyone just kind of shrugs and move on. Like, okay, yeah. sure. Vegas is the turning point where we go from a diamond heist into an actual weird James Bondy action movie, and we start getting like action set pieces and car chases and everything. And that is the point also where rear projection and bad filming starts to cut in, and I'm like, the quality mm-hmm. of the movie takes a sudden dip at the halfway point.
You can see it quite noticeably here. Like, there were some times when I was like, "Ooh, I pointed this out before. I hate this
yeah.
so very yeah. much. No one
the shaky driving with the big wheel, yeah,
like this. Like, it drives me crazy. And like, they still do that to this day in movies. Like, yep. why can't you look like you just drive like you drive or
passive
whatever?
Casual, but, yeah. Like, it's not that hard.
Yes, yeah, yes. And yeah. it drives me crazy. It's very generic. Like, I'm pretty sure that there were, you know, where you see the same car passing in the background, it's like the same just 10 seconds on reel or whatever. Like, they were economical in the making of these movies with how much money they spent, and like, they sure didn't give a shit about the budget of this part of the movie. And now no. it seems that that's all people care about. But yeah. anyway, I digress.
Yeah. Blofeld is, of course, revealed to be alive, because we all knew that was going to be the case. You don't cast a major actor for the role and then just instantly kill him in the opening sequence of the movie. But nah. we have Blofeld, and then we have his two agents, Mr. Wint and Mr. Kidd, who are interesting characters. They are mm-hmm. two things about them. One, they absolutely do not fit the tone of the rest of the movie. They're like grafted on from a completely other film.
Mm-hmm.
And number two, they're really ineffective when it comes to killing James Bond. They're great at killing everyone else. Instant 5 out of 5, no notes. That James Bond yeah. rolls up and they do the most elaborate, stupid plans that never work.
It really is just the coyote chasing yeah. the Roadrunner at times, but it seems like how he just gets his way out of these situations that should be very easy compared to how good they are killing other people. But like, I mean, that's just the Bond plot armor right there, I guess.
It's the Dr. Evil. I'm going to put him in a situation where he will die, but there's an easy way for him to get out. And then I'm going to assume that everything will be fine. This yeah, is Mr. Wint and Mr. Kidd.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just assuming everything went to plan. What's the problem? Like, yeah, why is this weird?
They put James Bond in a concrete tube that's going to get buried underground. And they're like, that should kill him. Not only does it not mm-hmm. kill him because it's getting installed somewhere, but he's easily able to escape because there's a hatch for him to get through. How was this supposed mm-hmm. to work as a death, guys? It didn't even work as a temporary hold.
It's not even like you can barely call that a holding cell, right?
Yeah, like, no, he know. Got out in like 5 minutes the second he woke up. Like, that is just stupid.
yeah, definitely strange.
They roll up to someone else, beat them over the head, shoot them, poison them, burn their body all in the space of 2 seconds. Like, that's a problem that's mm-hmm. taking care of itself. They wander up to James Bond's like, you know what? Let's make him wait somewhere 8 hours. I'm sure he'll just die of boredom.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. At first, I assumed that the plan was just to get the USSR and the US to fight each other, because those are the two targets that Blofeld goes after. And then Blofeld mm-hmm. just decides to hold the US hostage, and there's never any mention of the USSR again, even though that seemed like a major plot point. And Blofeld doesn't really have a plan. Blofeld is clearly just winging it for the love of the game. But it would be nice if anything in the story was consistent and we weren't just already stealing plot points from other films.
Yeah, yeah. It definitely feels slapdash together for a Blofeld plan, right?
Mm-hmm. And then it just kind of all collapses around him when James Bond shows up, as he always does. Can we just have Blofeld be like, you know what? If James Bond comes anywhere near here, just don't let him in the base. Don't bring him in. Don't throw him in an easily escapable brig. Don't do anything. Just be like, no, you're not allowed on the property. We're going to have you trespassed and shot. Okay? Like, mm-hmm. yeah. just fucking commit.
It's like you're waiting for him to roll up to the security booth right there mm-hmm. to come in. There's a picture like, do not serve this guy. And it's a picture of Bond right yeah, there. Like, yeah. maybe we got to dumb it down to that kind of level for them.
Yeah. Let me check the list. One name on there. Oh, your name's on yeah. the list. You're not allowed in. Like,
yeah. Oh, that's it. I thought this was the list of the people that were allowed in.
Yeah.
Like, oh, my God.
So bad. Now, this movie is weirdly stitched together, has a lot of strange things going on it, a lot of dumb things going on in it, and yet somehow, again, is probably at least the third best of the Connery run, because a lot of the films were much worse.
That really says something, too, right? There is a noticeable uptick in the quality of the Bond from the Lazenby one compared to the Bond in this one, and that feels really awkward as a fan to say, who was not really a big fan of the Lazenby one until I rewatched it with you most recently. So, I don't know. Like, the Bond movies have a formula, and at least they stick to them, but they're clearly need to switch something up, because they are not cinematic masterpieces at all. They are what they are, but they're also not as good as I remember them being, which feels really weird as a fan to say, I'll tell you that much.
Well, it's because there's a noticeable uptick in quality in more recent films. It's hard to watch the Craig era, which we'll eventually get to, and then come back to this and expect the same kind of movie. Even taking into account the decades of difference, they're just they almost feel like they're from different franchises.
Right, right. So, yeah, much more Jason Bourne feel in the Bonds nowadays than the Austin Powersy feel of these old-fashioned Bonds, for sure.
We will get a change of formula. To a little small extent, because we are now finally done with Connery. We are moving on to Roger Moore, who's probably not any better. I mean, I'm not a fan, but I know there are a lot of Bond fans that are split. Is it Connery or is it Moore? Who's the better? Most people, if they it's a comparison, tend to come down the Connery side, and that's because while Moore has some good movies, he has some real dog shit films.
Yeah, there's some good ones in the middle, and there's some good villains that we get coming up for the Roger Moore era here, for sure. 7 movies in a row of him, and
let's do 2 Roger Moores next time. Let's get his first kicked out, especially because they're both Guy Hamiltons. We'll do Live and Let Die and The Man with the Golden Gun next time on our continuing James Bond series, and just bring the Roger Moore series in and see how we feel about them.
Yeah, we're going to roll then. It'll be a good time. More Bond. Let's go.
So, this has been Not So Live from Asteroid G, still trying to figure out how to get those diamonds back. I'm your host, Mike Finkelstein.
Everybody, Mike the Ghoul here. Going to go teach the writers how to write a 3-plot sequence instead of a 2-plot weirdness. So,
we will see you all next time.